Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Tuesday, 27 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Petri Raidenhuis. We'll touch on the Tiger Brands chart, that trading update sent it flying higher, and new lows for S&P, well, new lows for the year. Saneem, talking Richemont online strategy, they're merging Net-a-Porter with Farfetch. I don't know. We'll get a sense from Tasneem around whether she thinks there's good value there. And then we're chatting the commodity boom in Africa. Is it benefiting the various different exporting economies? The sense seems perhaps not. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Another MVNO coming. Capitec aims to disrupt mobile market with data that doesn't expire and selling at a single price that is effectively 45 rand a gig. Business Day, the OECD more pessimistic about global growth as it cuts forecasts for South Africa and the world. The global forecast that dropped from 3% in 2022 and down to 2.2% for 2023. Morning markets, US was red. S&P down 1%, NASDAQ off 0.5%. For the S&P, that is a new low for the year, taking out the June lows. Asia is green, Sydney up 0.2% and Tokyo up 0.8%. Commodities red, gold 1,637, Brent 84.32 a barrel, platinum 8.46, palladium 2,047, Rand 18.01, Bitcoin 20,200, Tencent down 2.6% in Hong Kong, and top 40 opening call down 300 points, that's 0.5%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Raidenhuis from Herenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning. Tiger Brands came with a trading update yesterday. It was a good trading update, but of course, massive base effect in those numbers. But the market really liked it. Sent the stock up over 10%. And when I had mentioned I wanted to chat about it last night, you said, yep, you were holding it. Although I suspect you're probably holding it more about the charts than the fundamentals, perhaps.
Good morning. And also to be completely transparent, we've been holding it since about 200. So maybe not quite 200. I think that we sort of bought it around 185, around there. So we're still a little underwater under it, and have been sitting with it for about 6 months maybe now. So and at the time, what it had looked like is that we were essentially breaking this downtrend that it had formed since when it peaked, 2018 was the highs. And it looked like we were attempting to break that downtrend. Since then, you know, we've been, I guess, walking the line, at least the trend line that I'd drawn in. We've kind of spent quite a bit of time just walking that line. Essentially, Tiger Brands still coming down a little bit under pressure, but hugging that trend line. And then about, what was it, the early June sort of period, we started seeing a real actual change in trend for the first time. And now we finally have what is a Dow theory, the beginnings of an uptrend. We do need to sort of trade above, what's this level, 187, 189, essentially, to be able to say that we have made a new high. And then hopefully we actually have a turnaround. What is a good defensive company?
Yeah, because it is. I mean, it's classic. Yeah, since June, as you say, it's higher highs and higher lows. And even that weekly chart, it's actually looking like something's happening. It's quickly a shift spaces. We chatted a couple of weeks ago. The S&P was a whole bunch higher. I said in my intro there, S&P has now made a new low for the year. It's taken out those June lows, which we had a massive rally off them, but it didn't matter. It's given it all back. Are you still targeting, if my memory serves, 3,370? So still a 200 odd points, 300 odd points lower.
Yeah, not too much further to go. But that would still be, another 4 or 5% lower from here, I think?
Yeah.
Let me just quickly have a look. So, yeah, it's another, I'm mistaken, but another about 7.5% down from here. So, yeah, that's still the target for now. Just to keep in mind that is the 2020 pre-pandemic highs, right? So it's basically just an unwind of the move that was driven by the huge amounts of stimulus that came post the pandemic. So the real question is not whether or not we'll hit that, but the question, at least that I find I'm asking myself, is
what
once we're there, are we going to hold that level or do we fall even further?
Yeah, yeah, because it is, as you point out, it's the February 2020 level. So that was the all-time highs at that point in time. But of course, the market rallied massively on the pandemic stimulus. We'll see what happens when we get there. 3,370, that's the S&P level to be watching. Petri Rodenhuis, Herenia Capital Advisors, appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today. Tiger Brands traded up over 10% yesterday, 10.5%. It was a good trading update, but it was off a low base. There's massively a base effect in there. Question is, are you holding the stock? Maybe you are. Maybe you're preferring AVR. Perhaps you just... I mean, they've got problems. They had that talc powder, baby talc powder issues earlier in September as well. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter.
There's no postponing the inevitable. Your money knew this day would come. And you know what? It can hardly wait to start giving some back to you. When you invest in StanLib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. StanLib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Talia Petrusis, portfolio manager Alan Gray. Talia, appreciate the early morning time. Commodity boom, particularly in energy, and truthfully, it's across a broad swath of commodities. One would expect certainly some good benefit coming through for the African continent. But you make the point that that's not necessarily all the case. And I mean, for example, in Nigeria, they're producing about half the oil they were a decade ago, and of course they've got the fuel subsidy, which is eating into their available spend.
Yes, there's a great point, and actually your slip up when you said energy boom is actually very apt as well, because there has been this boom in energy prices, and for many commodities actually energy prices have surpassed the price increases of other commodities that we would think of as the African continent as being rich on. So for example, a place like Kenya, I mean, they are importers of oil, the price of which has risen very quickly in dollar terms, but they export commodities like cocoa and flowers, and their prices have just not been rising as fast. So what does that result in? Well, this trade imbalance means that they've actually had a dollar shortage in the economy, and we're seeing that dollar shortage across a few countries within Africa, and it's quite problematic because countries really need dollars for their imports, some of them being critical imports like food and fuel. Mm-hmm. They need it also to service their debt. And many of these countries, we know we have vast amounts of dollar debt, unfortunately. So really, the commodity boom, I would say, that we have now emerged from has really not been enough to work wonders on the continent. You know, a move in prices cannot do it all. The environment on the ground also needs to be quite conducive to growth.
And that was going to be my question. I mean, obviously, we get that commodities are cyclical. Everyone knows that. But perhaps these economies sort of haven't positioned themselves properly. And I mean, the one example perhaps is having dollar debt, although I appreciate, raising debt in Nigerian Naira or the Kenya shilling simply might not be that viable.
Well, they do raise a lot of local currency debt, but as soon as you can raise dollar debt, you open yourself up to the entire offshore investment community who's much more keen, who has these dollar-denominated emerging market debt funds. And, I mean, in the last few years, they've had an enormous appetite for African and frontier market debt. And the reason for that is that offshore interest rates were incredibly low. I mean, in the U.S. in 2020, we got to a point where, you know, the overnight rate of interest was 0%.
Yeah.
And in Europe, it was about negative. And this wasn't something that just popped its head up in 2020. For a period of about 40 years, interest rates in developed markets were dropping. And during that time, and especially during the later part of that time, I would say the last decade of that fall in interest rates, a lot of money started to flow out of the core of the financial markets, being the US, the UK, the whole of the EU, and into peripheral markets, like those across the African continent, because investors were on this great hunt for yield. Now, unfortunately, this meant that in 2018, a country like Ghana came to market to raise $3 billion of debt, and they got $20 billion worth of bids from auction bids. I mean, it's bizarre. I think at the time it was something like a third of the size of their economy in a single auction on a single day. That was what was on offer. So really, I think some countries have binged on debt, and those debt service costs have been very problematic for a place like Nigeria, you mentioned. I mean, it's consuming almost 100% of government tax revenue, paying back, you know, the interest on that debt. So it means then governments can't spend towards where they need to in the economy. Mm-hmm. But I think another big reason why, you know, a price boom, you know, in commodities can't work wonders alone is that really there needs to be growth-enhancing reforms at place in the economy. There needs to be a friendly business and investment environment. There needs to be clear and effective policy. And then the big one, obviously, which we're all familiar with, is there needs to be access to energy and electricity.
Is there a case to be made that during the good times, such as Ghana suddenly finding themselves with $20 billion of debt, that there was an opportunity there when things were looking better to make reforms, and it simply hasn't happened? Because of course now all that money is rushing back to the US. We've seen rampant dollar strength. Mm-hmm. Because you can put your money in a 5-year American Treasury and get 4%.
It is rushing back, and it's that rushing back is causing issues, in part because foreigners won't be there to refinance the debt when it matures, and some of it will mature in the next, you know, year and the next 2 years, and that's why, you know, I think quite broadly there's an expectation in the market that Ghana will default on its debt. Should they have done something differently? Well, I mean, it's surprising with Ghana. I mean, they export oil, and you know how the energy price has risen, but they don't have a refined fuel capacity online, so they're not able to refine fuel domestically in the economy. So because of that, you know, they end up exporting oil and importing refined fuel. So that then bleeds out of the trade balance, negates the positive impact of their exports. And then similar to South Africa, you know, they've had, you know, aging electrical infrastructure, aging energy infrastructure. They've had non-cost reflective electricity tariffs and very low collection rates from customers. So really the SA model sort of there. And then on top of that, as we said, this huge burden of debt that's raised in dollars that is now becoming extremely difficult to service, especially at a time when, you know, the Ghanaian cedi has lost about 40% of its value in the last year. So this dollar debt really sends African countries to the doldrums when they are hurting the most, because, you know, the fiscus is weak, the currency starts to weaken, and at the same time, their debt pile, which is denominated in dollars, simply grows. So they have approached the International Monetary Fund for assistance with restructuring their debt. And we'll have to see what takes place there.
Yeah, it is a giant challenge. And unfortunately, in the South African environment, we have very little non-ZAR debt, which is, I think, saving us in many sense. Tolly Pesosis, Portfolio Manager at Allan Gray, appreciate the early morning.
Your money gives a damn. If it could protest and sign petitions, your money would. But your money can do more than that. When you invest in Stanlib's Infrastructure Investment Fund, beyond getting solid returns, you are helping to build a more sustainable future through job creation and positive economic growth. Damn right you are. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Sitting now with Tasneem Somedin. She's research analyst at Old Mutual. Tasneem, appreciate the early morning. Richemont went into the online world, was back in 2010 with Net-a-Porter, merged with Yoox in 2015 and took full control in 2018. My understanding, never been operationally profitable, and now they're actually looking to do a deal with a company called Farfetch to, I suppose, try and salvage some of the business, but also just to get the Rupert's dream of a luxury global online brand.
Good morning, Simon. Thank you for having me on the show this morning. Yes, that's right. Yishmon went into the online world a little over a decade ago now with Net-a-Porter, and of course merged it with YNAP. And the goal really was to build a dominant global e-commerce luxury retailer. Mm-hmm. And they really wanted to own that experience, just like their own experience in their physical stores. They wanted to create a luxury experience online. But that strategy didn't really gain steam in the market as their peers started opening their own flagship online e-commerce stores. And the challenge really was that peers didn't really want to list on YNAP, given that it was controlled by Richemont. So I know it would be seen as kind of supporting your peer, and they decided to go at it alone. But then Farfetch in 2018 listed, and they really had a much better success in the market, gaining the luxury company's trust in hosting their platforms on their site. Farfetch also supports other luxury retailers' platforms with their own underlying platform solution. So if you think of an Amazon Web Services business, Farfetch basically provides that kind of service to the luxury retailers. But of course, they are much smaller than Richemont, which made this deal a little bit tricky.
Yeah, I mean, that's your point. Sorry there. They're much smaller. I mean, in essence, but the way the deal ultimately gets structured, as I understand, I mean, YNAP gets, Richemont sort of sells half of YNAP, a little over half, for a fairly small minority stake in Farfetch, 10, 11%, depending on some pricing. And then YNAP will potentially, in time, all of it move into Farfetch. I mean, Richemont is kind of giving up on the go it alone to say we're going to be better together, we'll have better scale.
Yes, so what Richemont has said is it's better to do this by partnerships than continue to do it alone, given that that is not their core business. Now, their core business is designing and creating luxury jewelry and luxury watches. And they haven't had much success with this online strategy that they've been following for about 12 years, whereas Farfetch has had a lot of success in the short term. But I mean, Farfetch is about a $3 billion business market cap. Richemont is $51 billion. YNAP would have been greater in market cap than Farfetch, just based on the investment that Richemont has made. So it was necessary, I guess, for Richemont to write down YNAP to a value that would allow Farfetch to acquire half, if that makes sense, and then invest in this business over the next 5 years to make it profitable. And at the end, Richemont should have a very profitable asset in its interest in Farfetch, which hopefully should be greater than what it is today, than the 10% it is today.
Yeah, okay. And that does explain to me why the write-down of what, 2.7 billion euros. I couldn't get my sense around that. But that's just to make the numbers numbers fit together. And you're of the sense that I mean, this is going to work. And I see the problem that Richemont had because it was their own brand. And I see where they're moving to, sort of the Amazon for luxury, and partnering up with someone and taking a stake in it who already are there and working it. This could solve the challenge or the challenges that Richemont's had in the online space because they've never really got it working.
Yes, that's right. And they've taken so much criticism from shareholders about the continuing operating losses that shareholders have had to fund. But now this deal, you know, shareholders can be rest assured that within 5 years' time, YNAP should be profitable, with Farfetch has committed to turning that business profitable. And within 5 years, we'll either have YNAP listed or YNAP merged with Farfetch, so Farfetch will acquire the remaining 50%, or YNAP will actually be sold to a third party. So Richemont has kind of committed that whatever happens over the next 5 years, at the end of it, YNAP will be out of Richemont's books from a consolidation point of view, and Richemont will return to its core of just being luxury watches and jewelry.
Okay. All makes sense. I appreciate the time. Tasneem Samadeen from Old Mutual, thank you very much for the early morning. That's it for today. Yesterday, we were chatting with OUTsurance CEO Martinez Visser. I almost called him the new. He's not the new CEO, but of course, they're a new listing in a sense. And we asked if it was a stock you'd be investing in. It was pretty much evenly split between the three options we gave. Around a third of you saying, yep, a great company. Another third saying, you'll have a look. And the last third saying, no insurance for me. Wayne McCurry made a great point on Friday that the short-term insurance, their key benefit is they can change the amount they charge very, very quickly, whereas the long-term insurers can't. They are locked in. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchli, Nicole. Thanks to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. We're talking go-getter crowdfunding in Africa.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now. On the money. Also available on podcast.